First, we have a list of pardons and commutations relating to events that occurred on January 6, 2021.
Okay, and how many people is this?
I think this order will apply to approximately 1,500 people, sir.
So this is January 6th. These are the hostages. Approximately 1,500 for a pardon.
Yes.
Full pardon.
Full pardon or commutations?
Full pardon. We have about 6 commutations in there where we're doing further research. Nice to see you again. So this is a big one. Anything you want to explain about this? We hope to get them. We hope they come out tonight, frankly. If you're expecting it. Approximately 1,500 people. Six commutations.
Were there any cases you did not commute or pardon of people?
We're looking at different things, but the commutations would be the ones that we'll take a look, and maybe it'll stay that way, or it'll go to, you know, full pardon.
And the order does require the Bureau of Prisons to act immediately on receipt of the pardons and commutation orders. Sir, this is an
Why don't we get that down so they can get them going right now?
Yes, sir.
Is that okay?
Yep, absolutely.
Well, all right, I remember that moment. I bet you do, too. I fairly levitated off my chair. I was so excited, so thrilled, and I still am. We've been talking about the people that have been arrested during January 6th. We've been talking to them, talking to their family members, talking to people that were there, just doing everything we can, talking to John Eastman, talking to all the people injured, harmed, destroyed by that day, by the setup that took place between Nancy Pelosi, the FBI, the deep state, I think even General Milley, refusing to call in, the National Guard per President Trump's request, letting the chaos happen, perpetrating violence on the protesters with flash bombs. It's mace in crowded tunnels. It really is a wretched story. And so when President Trump issued those pardons and commutations, oh, it was like a wash of justice that I never saw coming. And I'm still grateful. But today I want to talk to you about someone who's not free. You might recall we were driving back from the inauguration, the long trip down to Florida. We were trying to beat the winter storm. The sleet was coming. And I was using my laptop. I was actually doing a live interview for an outlet. And it was focused on the outside of the D.C. jail. And there were family members all there waiting. They'd been waiting for hours. It was just cold beyond measure. And I told you, I've told you in the ensuing weeks here that they were actually releasing some of these prisoners from this horrible, horrible prison with the Nation of Islam guards acting out sadistically this last 4 years, unbelievably. So they're releasing people, but they're sending them out in the district like one at a time. Not properly clothed, dropping them off in places that they don't recognize, and their folks were having to go and find them. And this was going on into the wee hours of the morning. And the one most horrible story to me was the fact that Jeremy Brown, who is a 20-year Special Forces Green Beret, who's been languishing for at that time about 3 years, and was in the D.C. gulag awaiting trial, never been on trial. They had him sell his things, give away his things in his cell, get dressed and be in the lobby with all the rest of them. As they were sending the rest of them out, they told him, oh, no, you can't go. We're handing you over to a marshal here, and you can't leave. And since that time, he has been in multiple prisons. I'm going to actually, at the end of the show, I'll bring you a little bit more of an update on him. And it's about Jeremy Brown. I want to talk to you today. I want to talk to his attorney. We have a long discussion, and she really does fill in the blanks. It gives you something else to pray for as we want justice to prevail for each and every one of those people that have been behind bars for so very long. But first, as long as the abortion pill is legally mailed and taken in all 50 states, no state can be abortion-free. Abortion pills carry distinct risks to mothers and death to babies, and now accounts for over 60% of all abortions. Preborn's network of clinics shine a light into this darkness by offering free services to women considering the future of their baby, including the abortion reversal pill. This powerful remedy can help reverse the curse of this toxic medication. Preborn reaches into the heart of babies and mothers and with God's love and compassion. And to date, they have rescued over 300,000 babies. Your tax-deductible monthly support of any amount is crucial in the fight for life. All proceeds go toward life, and together we can reverse this horrible curse. Saving babies isn't just about one life. It's about saving the heartbeat of the entire nation. To donate, please go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. You know that. And you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on social media platforms. You can find the podcast on any podcast platform. Our home base is afr.net. SandyRios.com is an easy way to listen, but Spotify, Amazon, all of them. And now today we have lots of information for you, and I just hope that you'll come along with me on this journey. We've been together on this. Many of you have written the J6 prisoners. You have prayed. You've given money. You have been a great partner to me in all of this, and I'm so grateful to each of you for doing that. But here's another story of someone that's not free yet, and we're going to bring his story to you in today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
You could be here forever.
I'll be here as long as the American people leave me here.
Jeremy is at the Capitol providing security.
I mean, he's quite literally the poster boy for the special forces.
When you were arrested, they never sat you down and said, is this yours?
No, because they're the same officers that recruited me on December 9th of 2020.
From Department of Homeland Security.
The same two guys.
These people are hiding all of this information, and judges have let them get away with that.
Well, that was the last voice there was the voice of Congressman Louie Gohmert, a good friend of mine, who was one of the champions before he left Congress of the J6ers, among all the other things that he did so well. But Laura Logan has been actually covering this particular J6er really well. I didn't realize that, but I was able to pull that clip from an interview that she did with Jeremy Brown. And the reason we're talking about him today, because he didn't get out. He's a January 6er that didn't get out. I remember the day that President Trump did the pardons. I was riding in the car back from the inauguration, driving, you know, down south on 95, and I was doing an interview with an outlet that was focused on the J6 jail in D.C. And family members were all around, and they were releasing them like one at a time, dropping them off in the district randomly, in the cold, not properly dressed. That was bad enough. But then there was Jeremy Brown, who had been sentenced to 7 years. They brought him out, had him give away his things in the cell, standing there in eager anticipation. And when they released everyone else, they made him go back to his cell, and he wasn't released. And he's still been in prison ever since. Carolyn Stewart was our guest, I think, about 2 years ago. She's been representing Jeremy and other J6ers. Her own story is incredible. Carolyn served 25 years on active duty as an intelligence officer. She served in Kosovo and Somalia, Kenya, Qatar, Iraq, Afghanistan, and lots of other places. And when she got out, she went to Ave Maria Law School. And as I recall from our last discussion, she has devoted herself pro bono to defending many of the J6ers, including Jeremy Brown. And she joins us, and I'm so happy again this morning. Carolyn, thank you for joining us again. We appreciate it.
Yeah, hi, good morning. Very honored to be here with you.
Okay, so Carolyn, how long have you, I know you weren't, lots of these guys have been through several attorneys for various reasons. How long have you been representing Jeremy?
Yes, well, basically since September. He had an attorney, and he had a Florida case in district. He had an appellate case, and then the D.C. case. So the DOJ split into two cases. One of his attorneys he had became ill. I've been following his case since way back when it first started, and working with his girlfriend, Tylene, to assist them. So, but I just came on officially in D.C. in this past September, very, very completely familiar with his case.
Yes. Well, all right. I'm going to go backwards here. So I just described what I saw and was experiencing in real time as he was experiencing that. It was a gut punch, a horrible gut punch when they did not let him out to people around him and, of course, to him too. So I just want to plainly ask you, where is he now? And what happened in that moment? What more can you fill in the blanks on why, we'll get into the court cases and all of that, but why did they turn him back? Can you tell me more about what happened that night?
Well, you covered it very well. So he was pulled out with all the other J6ers. He had been segregated from everybody, never put in the J6 pod in the DC jail/gulag. So they went and said, no, you're getting released. They took everybody down to an area where they would do a transfer. And then wherever he was in line, he got up. He had called Tylene, said, I'm getting out. She drove over. They were out in the parking lot, Tylene and his mother sitting in the cold. But then when he gets up to the U.S. Marshals, because the jail said, we're turning you over to the U.S. Marshals. So this is the U.S. Marshals, D.C. And he gets there, and they tell him, oh, that's a mistake. You're not released. So at this point, I've been asking, who made that decision? The U.S. Marshals don't make judicial decisions. So in other words, you're not getting released. They sent him back. Now Tylene's and mom are told, you can't pick me up. I'm not getting released. And then there's no court order. No judge said transfer him anywhere. So this comes to the point of, are we talking about abduction at this point? Because in order, he was in Florida in a jail, not even in the Bureau of Prisons. When they moved him up, I think it was July or August for his trial to D.C., and that was on a judge's order. And so who made this decision? There's no legal decision made. Some person who remains unidentified to this day decided that, you know what, that pardon doesn't apply to Jeremy Brown. And that's where we are. So they moved him from, a day or two later, they took him and shackles and chains and took him to one U.S. Marshals contract jail that they do with Kentucky. Then they moved him to another one in Grayson, Kentucky, and he's there for 4 or 5 days, and then they move him now where he's in FCI Atlanta, and then he was moved in FCI Atlanta from an initial cell and said, oh, you're not supposed to be here. Well, of course, he never had been assigned to a Bureau of Prisons. They moved him to a transition area, so now he can't get commissary. He can't have visitors. That area is for people who are supposed to be moved or released. But that's where he's been now for at least a week. And it's absolutely horrible. Nobody will answer anything. And so, but there's never been a court order of any type to move him anywhere and to say that he's not under the pardon. This is all being done by this deep state within, again, started in the U.S. Marshals and perhaps somebody backdoor inside the DOJ. That's all I know at this point, really. It's incredible.
Carolyn, all norms are off the table. But as his attorney, you can't even ask the Bureau of Prisons who signed an order. You can't access, you can't get information about why he's been sent certain places? Aren't there any rights for attorneys representing clients in that case?
Well, these people don't answer. I mean, the marshals bounced me all over the country because, you know, Jeremy's been told nobody. When you go into a prison, like, you're supposed to be shown your incarceration order. He's never been shown anything. So, and another attorney went up to see him, and I don't know if he didn't ask. This is somebody who does just general civil things for him, but they didn't come away with anything. So what there is now is there is a habeas. It's called a 2241 because of this, what we're calling wrongful incarceration, that's been filed by an attorney who's licensed to practice in Georgia, because that's one of the requirements. So now we have a Mr. Neil Pinkston who has filed that 2241, and that's been with a magistrate for a week now. Now, this is supposed to be, by its very nature, an emergency motion. So we now have the Northern District of Georgia federal court just sitting on this 2241 motion, where it's on the docket, but they haven't issued anything. We're going to have a hearing. There's nothing that says anybody respond. Government, tell us if you oppose. There's nothing. There's nothing at all. And this is absolutely incredible. I mean, we have a broken justice system at this point.
I guess so. And Carolyn, we have a new sheriff in town, a new president, and we're all delighted. I think I would probably speak for you, as I speak for myself, that when he declared that he was pardoning 1,500 of these guys, all but six, did you suspect at that time that Jeremy might be one of the six? Did you think that? That
no,
we're not going to be fully
all.
Pardoned?
I don't recall President Trump saying all but six, because what he did was in the proclamation order, he had, 14 names that were commuted instead of pardoned. But he didn't list anybody that he said, oh, this doesn't fall under my pardon. So, again, the people... Here's my view. Who don't fall under the pardon are people who had separate state crimes. And there's been a lot of people, I would just say, with zealotry on social media listing, you know, here are six names. But several of them had state charges, or they had crimes committed after they were indicted, brought to trial, or on pretrial release for January 6th, they had separate crimes that the way the pardon says, it says in relation to January 6th. So for people who, based on the FBI raid, and then instead of putting it all in one case, like Jeremy, well, let's split it out. But no, even the government has admitted in its filing documents that the separate Florida case is related to January 6th. So it's crazy, but, you know, nobody's, you know, jumping in.
All right. Well, let's go back even further now and talk about who Jeremy is, because people know, you know, it's hard for me, Carolyn. I've carried, you know, covered this as best I can for the last, you know, since it started on the very day that it started. And I've covered as many cases as I can, but people don't keep these things in their mind. And Jeremy's case is familiar to you and me now, but not to them. So Jeremy was a Green Beret 20 years, and he actually was literally the poster boy. He was like the perfect specimen poster boy for the Green Berets, right?
Yes, he was on the poster. He was, yes.
Yeah. And he had distinguished himself in Iraq. I'm not sure about his exact record, but he had distinguished himself. There was nothing in his record, no crimes, no nothing. I mean, he was like the poster boy. He was the literal poster boy for the Green Berets. And all of that changed, and it actually changed before January the 6th, that when the FBI came to visit him. Can you just talk us through that? What happened, and why did they come to visit him?
Well, you know, now we're talking about the Joint Terrorism Task Force down here in Tampa. which ought to be disbanded, their techniques and everything else is a separate story, maybe a separate interview later. However, he signed up in early November to be in the Oath Keepers, which is a legitimate organization despite all the defamation where they're called some kind of crazy militia. This is just all horse pucky. But he did. He went to a meeting, and there were actually two FBI confidential human sources at that meeting. So somewhere within a couple of weeks later, and this is before the January 6th rally was announced, two agents wanted to meet with him, and they showed up. Now, he said, I'm going to record this. So it was a legal recording. But they tried to recruit him to be an informant, and he turned them down. So, and the other thing is, when he was at the Capitol and there to provide a protective detail, because Antifa is known to attack elderly people, people on the edges of the crowd, particularly there was a scheduled speaker permitted rally on the Capitol grounds. So he takes that person there. But they called him on January 6th. They knew he was at the Capitol. They called him on January 7th. Said, yeah, I was there. But they waited. He released that recording because he said, after looking at everything, he knew everything was terribly wrong, that there was a plot. You want to call it Fedsurrection, color revolution, whatever was going on at the Capitol. And so he made that interview where they attempted to recruit him public in March of 2021. Well, they waited until September of 2021 to come and, do the raid on his house and arrest him. And they used a terrorism-based warrant of all things. That's why I say the cases are related. They used an out of jurisdiction that normally a local magistrate has to sign a search, because this is not pre-Magna Carta or whatever England, where we just do general search warrants and the government can just go anywhere in the country and start raiding people's property. So they bypassed that. Under the federal rules of evidence, they were allowed, or criminal procedure, they were allowed to do a search warrant for terrorism, domestic terrorism, outside of being signed in Florida. And they deliberately did that in D.C. They did magistrate shopping. Those magistrates signed off. I'm pretty sure they rubber stamped every single warrant. I didn't see any denied there.
Then
they did the arrest warrant to a different judge with different charges. It was dirty from the beginning. Retaliation, retribution.
Let me interject a couple of things before you go further, because first of all, Oath Keepers, I want to just say something about them. I know people who are part of Oath Keepers, if they're still existing. They were part of Oath Keepers. A lot of military, a lot of high-ranking military, a lot of policemen. And the whole idea is that you, like my husband is a former FBI agent, Carolyn. And he put, when he took the oath, put his hand on the Bible and swore his allegiance to the Constitution, he could still recite that oath to you. That's what that means. I'm still keeping my oath. I'm keeping my oath for the rest of my life. I'm an oath keeper. It's something very honorable. And they twisted it so horribly. It's not, even Proud Boys have been defamed, but it's not Proud Boys. These are men who have taken the oath to uphold the Constitution, and they want to just maintain that oath. And it's as simple as that. And, I listen to part of Jeremy's recording when the FBI agents, I don't know if it was just, was it DHS or was it FBI also? Or was it both of them?
They identified themselves as DHS, but I'm not sure if it was one and one, like one DHS and one FBI. Not positive.
Okay. Well, the thing that struck me, Carolyn, because my husband, suffers a great emotional distress over what's happened to the FBI, I have to tell you, because that was... He spent 23 years of his life serving the country honorably, and it's been very distressing for him and his fellow former FBI agents. So when I listened to that interview that Jeremy captured and then later made public, I was appalled at the lack of professionalism. It was almost like a B-grade movie. The conversation was sort of ridiculous. And Jeremy was trying to, you know, he was the smartest man in the room. Yeah, so what are you saying? And they're trying to coax him by saying really dumb things like, yeah, we know that we don't believe, oh, you're 100%, you're a great guy. Stupid stuff. But you could help us and we could work together. It wouldn't be that big great. And he said, oh, yes, I know all about JTTF, Jeremy. He didn't really tip his hand at that point, but that was the interaction. And then as I understand it, Carolyn, it's those same two agents, whether they were, they had to have been FBI, at least one of them, that they came to arrest him then in, September of 2020? Same people?
Yes. And they showed up. So they were not in any armored protective gear. And, in the interview, they had rated them a 0 out of 10 as far as dangerousness. Yet the government, which is the DOJ, and one of them in court, argued against his release. He's a danger. That's why for a year pre-trial, he was never released. I mean, this is the clown show we're facing and the deception. I would say that same office with that DOJ in Tampa, part of the feds, they've made all kind of other false accusations against people upon detention. So, I mean, we had a magistrate who's, another politically weaponizer, I'd say. That's what's happened with Jeremy. But these guys with their civilian clothes and driving around in somebody's civilian vehicle, like, come on. They're looking for their own movie. You're right.
They are inferior. I'm just telling you, they are inferior. I'll speak for the Bureau. When I was in Chicago on radio, I used to interview FBI agents, and they were always the cream of the crop. There was an old joke that said, what does the Secret Service and the FBI have in common? And the punchline is they all wanted to be FBI agents. But I mean, they really were. They were attorneys. They were they had CPA. They were some doctors. They only recruited. And no drugs, no criminal past. And my husband did hiring polygraphs during some of his last years at the Bureau. And he used to come home and talk to me about the kinds of people they were bringing in to hire. He was really appalled. And I'm just saying, I heard in Living Color, these are not America's best people. They just aren't. All right, so then it results in something like this ridiculous arrest of Jeremy Brown. But this is just part of the story. We're talking with Carolyn Stewart. I want to take a pause for a second. And she, just to remind you, she's a former intelligence officer with the military, and she left the military as an Army colonel, and she served all over the globe. She has a ton of expertise herself on all things military. Now here she is representing this 20-year Green Beret award-winning poster boy, Jeremy Brown, who is still incarcerated. They're moving him all over the country. It's just a tragic story, and she's pro bono for nothing, representing him and some other clients that she's going to get into in just a second. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
As abortion continues to rise, Reborn is expanding their life-affirming care in the darkest corners of our nation to help more hurting women and save more babies. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $15,000 will place an ultrasound machine in a needy women's center, saving countless lives for years to come. To donate, just go to preborn.com/Sandy. And if you don't have $15,000, of course, whatever you can give will go to help Preborn and the moms. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
All right, so we're ready for part two. And in this half of the discussion with Carolyn, she's going to talk about the extra charges that they brought against Jeremy and how they came about. It's really a fascinating, tragic story. And so before we begin again with her, though, I want you to hear a report. Now, this is a year old. This is WFLA out of Florida, and they're reporting on Jeremy. And then we'll go right back with part two of our discussion with Carolyn Stewart on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
Retired Green Beret accused of trespassing on Capitol grounds during the January 6th riots was sentenced to 7 years in prison for weapons charges this morning. Eight on Your Side investigator Walt Buteau has been following this case and was in court for the sentencing hearing today as Jeremy Brown pleaded for leniency.
Brown was charged with these federal crimes after a search of his Tampa property connected to his alleged involvement in the January 6th riots. That backdrop was enough to pack the courtroom.
But this is my field.
A small group of Jeremy Brown supporters picketed outside, and the benches in the Tampa federal courtroom for his sentencing were packed with others. The 48-year-old retired Green Beret, with his beard and hair now neatly trimmed, asked the judge to be released on time served, currently totaling 17 months in the Pinellas County Jail. Brown's mother also made an impassioned plea for her son's freedom.
At one point, you turned to the prosecution and waved your finger as if you were punishing them.
Well, yeah, I'm off at them. Sorry. But they're lying. What happened in the day today is not justice.
The prosecution told the court Brown lied to the jury when he claimed the feds planted these two grenades found in an RV at his Tampa home. When she sentenced Brown to 87 months in prison, Judge Susan Bucklew called his military service extraordinary, but questioned his lack of remorse for possessing the grenades, these two illegal guns, and a classified document. Judge Bucklew said, "You absolutely accepted no responsibility for what you've done in this case, and you were defiant to the end." This video obtained by 8 on Your Side shows FBI agents at Brown's door weeks before the January 6th Capitol riots. Brown claims the agency tried to recruit him to infiltrate the Oath Keepers during a meeting in Ybor City a month before the melee. Brown has 14 days to appeal the sentence, and his attorney told us his client is appealing the decision on a motion to suppress evidence in this trial, but he would not elaborate on Brown's request for time served instead of 7 years in prison.
But I have tremendous respect for the court, the system, and the jury finding. He was acquitted on some counts. He was found guilty on other counts. And so we respect the system and the process.
Now, tell us how these enhanced charges came to be. They did come and raid his home. In fact, let's pause just for a second. We have a little clip of that. It's just a part of it. And this is Jeremy Brown recorded this himself. He was with his girlfriend, Tyleen, so you're going to hear her voice, too. This is clip three.
And what am I being arrested for, gentlemen?
It's a trespassing for up at the Capitol, is what it, we're not
I was trespassing on the Capitol?
Behind the barriers and stuff like that.
No.
No, I wasn't.
Okay. That's what the charge. Well, I'm going to read you a search warrant. I'll read you the arrest warrant and stuff like that.
I would like
that. Could you step out of the vehicle?
Yeah.
Real quick.
Please continue to record.
I am.
Hey. And don't let them in the house until you read the search warrant.
You have keys to the house, because I don't want to have to break the door.
No, we have a code to our house.
Can you provide me the code to the house?
Where's the warrant? You're going to give me a warrant before you ask me for a code to my house.
That's not how this works.
That's how it works.
I don't have to.
You have to show me a warrant before you go into my house.
I will provide you one if you're...
Okay, where,
if
provide
you work
it.
With us.
The person who has the warrant is on their way.
Okay, well, when they get here, we'll go into the house. No problem.
That's not how this works.
That is how it works.
Now, I'm going to ask you again nicely. Can I please have the code to your door so I don't have to smash your door?
You guys took a damn oath. Okay, I don't want anyone in my house until I see the warrant.
Okay, well, here's the honest truth, and I apologize. I'm not trying to be difficult with you. Technically, they don't have to give it to you. They don't.
Really?
They'll give it to you when they're done with it. They don't have to show it to you before.
Really?
I'm explaining this all to you. You're just not listening, or you don't want to listen, or you think you know it all.
Yeah, you're just not listening. You think you know it all. Okay, so that's just a tiny bit of what they recorded. But they did get in, Carolyn. I guess Tylene did let them in. Is that right?
Well, so, yeah, Tylene was the one recording that because Jeremy was in handcuffs.
Oh, okay.
If you see the video. He was already handcuffed, you know, by the two clowns who call themselves federal agents, you know, dressed in polo shirts or whatever. I mean, frankly, looking very sloppy, as most of the new hires do. So I don't know how long they've been around. But they did not. This is important legally. They did not have the search warrant that they went and then, you know, went and had already started searching the trailer and the RV, but they didn't have the search warrant. When they showed up with it, they did not have anything that said what they were supposed to be searching for. So, you know, what Tylene heard was, well, we have a search warrant, but, you know, here's pictures of your house, and it's her house, pictures of her RV, pictures of her trailer, and they didn't have what was supposed to be searched for. What was buried in an affidavit that was, you know, in there that the magistrate signed was they were looking for explosives, and they were looking for explosives and weapons that were taken to D.C. on January 6th. That's what they were there for. Well, they go in, and then in the RV, they planted two grenades, and we can talk about that because those were not Jeremy Brown's grenades. They had forensics, being biometrics, DNA, whatever DNA you want to call, of other people and being in other places. And this is tape that picks up everything that didn't match a single thing, you know, Jeremy, his girlfriend, his dogs, or the residents of the RV. So, yeah, this is how great our federal government was during that event.
Well, and I just to be clear, they weren't looking for, it wasn't that they had any accusation or evidence that he had any weapons on him on January the 6th. And as I understand it, he went to be a bodyguard for someone who was a high-profile person or for their mother or something to that effect. Did he even do anything? I think it was, they charged him, what, going behind the ropes or going behind this imaginary line that they established, I think, on January the 7th that nobody knew they were not supposed to be behind. Right. They charged a lot of people that. So that was his only offense. Is that right, on January the 6th?
Right. He was not guilty of it. He was charged with Section 1752 under 18 U.S. Code, which is essentially going in a restricted area. But that area had to be restricted for a U.S. Secret Service protectee. And that's the big lie about January 6th, is that the U.S. Secret Service ever asked for or designated anywhere outside, and frankly inside, to be that area. That's what they made up and charged everybody with, maybe except for a couple of people. They charged everybody with that. But no, they did have, see, the warrant and the arrest warrant were separately done. The arrest warrant was what said, oh, you were around the ropes and this and that. But the search warrant, and this one I'm telling you, you have to understand the dirtiness of this. The search warrant accused him of conspiracy, transporting explosives across state lines and weapons. And so they did go there. And of course, this was based on a guy named Caleb Berry, who became an informant, a cooperator after he was there. He said he went there to go stop the electoral count. He said he was even trying to steal the certificates. That's in his plea agreement. It's online. It's public. And now he's accusing Jeremy. He didn't know Jeremy from the man in the moon, but he was in, Tylene had her van that they were bringing up so that the RV was not, you know, it's going to park in an RV park and never in D.C., And he made these allegations that somebody else told me Jeremy had explosives and this and that. You know, no sane magistrate would sign a warrant for a search based on that 8 or 9 month old hearsay, uncorroborated information. And so they fought against, but this is the thing. They split the case, but they fought in both instances that search warrant was valid and everything was valid because it was all related to January 6th. And yet the very same DOJ is sitting on its butt with this guy here in the Middle District of Florida who should have gone in and said, release him. It's all related to January 6th. President Trump's words are his words. Nobody gets to change them. That's what he wrote in the pardon.
Now, Carolyn, let me put words in your mouth and you correct me. But my understanding, I'm going to say what you've already said. There were two grenades, but they had no DNA, nothing. They had, I think, dog hair, but it wasn't his dog. It had fingerprints, but it wasn't his fingerprints. So there's nothing left to believe. And he said those were not his grenades. Those, so we think they were planted. And then there were two guns. And as I understand, one was like an antique weapon, and the other was, I don't know what it was, but they weren't registered. So, and he said, yes, those are my guns. Now, here's the thing, Carolyn, former law enforcement guys have guns. They do. They have guns. I can speak to that. And if you don't register a gun, do you know right offhand what the normal penalty for that is? I mean, you are supposed to register your guns, but what is the penalty?
No, there is no requirement in here in Florida. I don't know about other states.
Okay.
I won't speak to them. No requirement to register a firearm. What Jeremy had were a shotgun that was shorter than the length prescribed, and then a rifle. These were his brothers. One was a family heirloom, might have been the shotgun from the grandfather. But when his brother died, his mother asked him to take those and hold them. So he did. But the charges in that it was an illegal firearm, the charge is that it had a short barrel, and it's under the IRS tax code. It's not even under the criminal code. You know, 18 U.S. code is criminal, and the tax code is some different chapter in the U.S. code. And so, gosh, most cases, unless it was used in a crime, or something else like taken across state lines, which nobody even said he did, that he took it. You know, it had to be related to commerce and it had to be related to another crime. Most times, the FBI, nobody is even going to, DOJ is not going to prosecute that. They're going to say, go pay a fine or forfeit these and they get destroyed. This was ludicrous that was charged and even convicted as a felony. So that's what I'm saying. Where did he do anything with interstate commerce when somebody gave them to him as his brothers?
Yeah, well, so
crazy because juries suck when they have a prosecution that's just steamrolling them with baloney.
Yeah, and just a couple of other things to point to, just kind of connect the dots a little bit. That Louis Gohmert again was on that clip that we played, and Louis is addressing this fake evidence. He knew all about this. He's affirming that.
Right.
He's a former judge, by the way, in Texas.
Yeah.
And then, you have that. I don't want to leave a stone unturned here, Carolyn, because I don't want people to be looking this up and find something else and think that we left anything out on purpose. Because the other thing that he was, they allegedly found, classified documents? Now, I really don't know what that's all about. What in the world are they talking about?
Well, all right, so there are two things. There was the same place where these grenades, and by the way, on the grenades, the provenance of those and the tracking shows that they were never any place that Jeremy was. His unit never signed for him. I mean, in SOF, they were Vietnam-era ones that perhaps had been refurbished and had been to Germany and maybe, you know, Kuwait during a Desert Storm. Who knows? But they would easily never be around Jeremy. So that's the first thing. He could never have gotten those. The second thing on the CD that they allegedly found, he and Tylene, it's on their property, and I think they found it in the RV or on the trailer. It's like they never saw it, just like the grenades, neither one of them. And this CD is brand new, not a fingerprint, not a mark. Yet he retired, 2012 or so? And he would have, been lugging this around for however many years. And it's like a brand new one. And, you know, though, I think that those were found acquitted. But what they, and this, I will go back to ineffective assistance of counsel on this, because he couldn't even call me as an expert because I was a declassification and a classification assignment officer for a theater or two under the CENTCOM commander. So they found a document that he had created a shell, which was just a shell, but there was no classified information. It just was like marked. It was like a draft, you know, something you would put secret at the top and bottom, and you might have paragraphs, but there was no classified information. That's what he was convicted of, to my understanding, in that trial. And he had, again, he had a local attorney for that. And, yeah, that's the last thing.
All right, So to sort of give an overview here, so people are probably, I want to make sure they can follow this. So the FBI came to him, tried to get, before January 6th ever happened, they were like, I think there were a lot of plans going on at the FBI and other places. I believe with all that I've done to cover January the 6th, I think you'd be hard-pressed to say that there wasn't some sort of a plan to make that happen. And that doesn't mean that no one there did anything they shouldn't have. I wouldn't go that far, but I would almost go that far, I'll tell you, because you can see the setup with the FBI infiltrators, with all of the others, and I won't go into all the details of that day, but people have heard me talk about that enough. So Jeremy is reproached. They want him to cooperate. They want him to snitch on the Oath Keepers. He tapes them recruiting him, and then he refuses to do that. And he warns the Oath Keepers that there was an informant in one of their meetings. And so he makes this tape public. And so they have it in for him. That's just, they do. They have it in for him. And then they come and they arrest him, the same agents that came and tried to recruit him. And then they suddenly find these grenades and they find these two guns, which we've told you why he had them, the so-called classified information. Let me repeat, Carolyn was a former intelligence officer. She was an Army colonel. And then she went to law school after she got out of the Army. So this is her background, her bailiwick. All right, so here is Jeremy. He's been now in prison in excess, I'm guessing now, it's like 1,300 days, something like that. I'm just guessing. 1,300 days. So Carolyn, and I also just read that he can't even talk to Tylene, who lives with his mother, so he has no contact with them. It's the treatment that he's getting now. Can you address that, or do you even know? Can you even talk to him?
Well, I've asked twice to the FBI. I've put it in writing. Here's my request. I want an attorney client call. Here's his number, all that. And they've never responded to do that. But what happened is the feds only allow people 300 minutes, phone minutes, a month. And he used his. So now he has email, kind of. It's under something called Core Links. So his mother moved and is living in Tylene's house in Florida. So in order, you know, he could write to his mother, but for some reason, the prison won't explain why, they blocked his email communication with Tylene. So that's really weird. So his mother now had to go get, because he would normally just communicate to Tylene, say hi to mom, and she could write back through Tylene. So I don't, nobody knows. They don't answer that. And they don't have to. See, this is the problem. There's no transparency. The BOP doesn't have to have any transparency about why they send you somewhere or assign you anywhere. That's how it works. This is something that we hope DOJ will go to as it gets down its list of places to go.
Carolyn, have you been able to make contact with people near the president?
Yes. And so what I can't figure out is, well, part of the issue is one of the people who was writing up things for the White House for the DOJ on this matter and, you know, a couple others, because I have another client who's also incarcerated post January 6th. And the problem is you know, they've had to answer to all these six, eight, or however many other people that everybody are claiming these fall under the pardon, and they have to. So they have to go research every case and everything. But I was in contact. I gave them all the case documents. I went through an explanation of here's what happened, here's why it is related, here's why it falls under the pardon. So I don't know if they've completed their packet. We're asking again today whether that's sitting with I'm not sure that Pam Bondi's doing any of this. I think it's Mr. Bove, who's the deputy U.S. Attorney General. So unless somebody gives an order to the U.S. Attorney for the Middle District of Florida to follow the D.C. process and at the appellate court put in to vacate the charges in the case, which will then cause the district court to have to dismiss everything. Unless that happens, this U.S. attorney here in the Middle District is just sitting and acting like he doesn't have to do a darn thing. His assistant U.S. attorneys have just said, well, you're not on this case, so we won't talk to you. Well, yeah, I kind of am. But, you know, all they would say is, well, if you put in, they will not put in the motion on their own. That is what their answer was.
Are you speaking in Florida? When you say U.S. attorney in the middle, you said what description? Is this Florida?
U.S. attorney, this guy, he's the U.S. attorney for the Middle District of Florida, Biden appointee who has not yet been fired. All he has to do is tell his assistant U.S. attorneys who are at the appellate level or at the district, but presumably this has to start at the appellate. And yes, tell them, file a consent motion. Just follow what was done in D.C. It's called a consent motion to vacate and remand for the case to be dismissed. He hasn't done it. He's just sitting there like, I don't have to do it. So until somebody from the U.S. Attorney General's office orders him to do it, he's not going to do it. And they're all just sitting there coyly on the sidelines. Well, this pardon does apply to Jeremy. Everything arose from that search. And in the D.C. case, you know, which was separate than the Florida, they split into two cases. They were planning to use Caleb Berry to come in as a witness. I verified that before everything, obviously, up there got dismissed. But they were planning to talk about the explosives. They were planning to talk. They were calling him a co-conspirator in the Oath Keepers. So this is the big, again, deception and disgusting, unethical behavior in the DOJ that's not been fixed yet in Jeremy Brown's case.
All right. Can you give me that U.S. attorney's name? Because there are a lot of people. I mean, I don't want to put you in a compromising position. I can Google it. But I don't. Can you do that?
I think it's Hangrave. So let me just verify this real quickly. Somebody else asked me that this morning. Hanberg, Roger Hanberg.
Okay.
And he's in there. You know, he's had a pretty good PR campaign the last month or two. He obviously wants to keep his job. He's, you know, I don't know, mortgage, you know, somebody in college. But, you know, oh, look at all this immigration. I'm doing all this immigration crime. Well, no, actually, the JTTF here in Florida has not done that. They've been persecuting J6ers all across the Middle District of Florida. And the immigration is coming from what the Florida sheriffs have done. You know, how dare he take credit for their work? You know, he has not even attempted, because Ron DeSantis, I'm pretty sure, would kick him out of the state if he attempted to call anything a sanctuary here. But this is what we're dealing with.
He's all right, Roger Hanberg. Okay.
Don't fire me. I'm a great prosecutor.
Yeah. All right. So if people want to help, I'm listening and writing all this down, Carolyn, and people are too. If people want to help Jeremy, what is the best? I know if you want to hear more about this or want to remember the details or see them in writing, go to jeremybrowndefense.com. Jeremybrowndefense.com. That would be to help him with his defense, like with Carolyn, who I know is not. She's
no,
giving.
Hang on a second, I have to correct you so we don't any of us get in trouble.
First
of all, I do pro bono. His other attorneys are paid. His appellate attorney. So this isn't for legal funding. Those have all been paid, and people have donated over the years. But, you know, give, send, go, Jeremy Brown defense or whatever it's called. You know, what I understand he has still, you know, he has a truck loan. And, of course, he hasn't been able to be out employed anywhere. So his, you know, what he's got are bills. You know, Tylene has paid for everything. And of course, the donations that come into the trust, my understanding, I can't necessarily confirm this, but in other words, you know, his truck, the insurance and whatever. So when he gets out, he has something, right?
Right, so right. I've got the exact address. I've got that address. It's givesendgo.com/Jeremy Brown Defense. givesendgo.com/Jeremy Brown Defense.
Yeah, and it'll come up, you know, fight for the constitutional rights or something like that, as far as what it talks about. But that should get everybody there.
Well, Carolyn, before we say goodbye, because I'm hoping that this podcast will help, I'm glad you told us about Roger Hanberg and in the Middle District of Florida, because there are a lot of people listening from Florida. So maybe we can affect some change here. The last thing, though, is you alluded to this, but there are still some others that are incarcerated. Do you know anything about, I know you mentioned one, do you know anything about, in general, what's happening to those people? And is it similar to Jeremy's circumstances in terms of extra charges?
Well, what's similar is I just took on a client, Elias Kostianis, and he also has a give and go under his name. Kostianis, Kostianis, who was ordered to self-surrender, and the judge and even the AUSAs and his CJA defense never went in after the pardon was issued and said, okay, stop, it applies. So we just did a motion on appeal because that's just where we are. But his is the same thing. What did they find in his case? He had some testosterone. I mean, oh, he had a controlled substance, and then he had guns in his basement. That's illegal. So this is the stuff nobody even pursued Hunter Biden for. You know, everybody heard about that, but, you know, he's using meth and coke. So that case is one where, and they filed those charges about in a Maryland district court almost 9 months after they arrested him for January 6th, where he was peaceful. On the Capitol grounds. He's no violence, nothing like that. This guy doesn't have a criminal background. You know, a civilian his whole time. There's one other case, Matthew Martin, out in California, where they did the same thing. They raided, and he, for whatever reason, I don't know if he had a previous crime, couldn't have, or he was already on supervised release. I have no idea, but for some reason, his girlfriend, there was a restraining order or something. So this was a California civil, as far as I understand. But when they went in on the search, they, you know, it's not his gun safe. It's hers that's, again, in the basement. They bring in, like, the jaws of life to break into the safe. And she had her own firearms in there, which he had no access to. And they turn around and charge him with that separately in California. And they've had him incarcerated. I say it federally. So this is the kind of garbage that went on with these searches. Like, let's do the worst we can to persecute everybody. So I know Kostianis and Martin are two. But you know, we have to break out. There's some other people floating names around. Do they fall under the pardon? I don't know. If the FBI is claiming you threatened to kill Obama, maybe that has nothing to do with January 6th, as in one case. You know, somebody else who did, you know, something that was a DUI in Florida, state charges. No, everybody stopped. The problem with that case is that the feds are holding him in the BOP when, from the gulag, once he was pardoned, he should have just been taken back to a Florida jail because he was just awaiting paying his bail. And this was a state DUI. So those are the things to be sorted out rather than, you know, weighing down that there's six or eight people. But there are people, yes.
Wow. Well, that gives us a really good idea, Carolyn, of how we should think about this. And I really do. Listen, We've got to meet face-to-face sometimes because I just have to give you a hug for all that you're doing. I'm so grateful. And, you know, off A. Maria, I remember doing an interview with the pizza people that built that before they even built it. I was back in D.C. as president of CWA, and we did a long conversation about the plans and the hopes and the dreams they had for Ave Maria. And now here I am talking to you, a graduate of that great law school, and the good that you're doing. Yeah. It's really wonderful. And so, well, Carolyn, God bless you and all that you're doing, and thank you for representing these guys so faithfully. And hopefully the next time we talk, we can have a real celebration. That's what I'm praying for.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you. And especially to your listeners, anybody who donates or even just cares and says prayers for these prisoners. This is such a little harsh, disappointing time for them. But, you know, with faith in God, they should be able to hold out until we get the right things happening. So thank you so much.
Yeah, oh, my pleasure. And for Jeremy Brown, go to givesyngo.com/Jeremy Brown Defense.
My name is Jeremy Brown, inmate 1875858.
That's Jeremy Brown, you know, this big special forces guy, the poster boy, because of his success. He looked the part, he acted the part, 20 years, a Green Beret, and now he's in prison. And he will tell you, I just read his words, that when he was sent back to his jail in the D.C. gulag after everyone else was released, he wept like a baby. He cried. He just broke down and cried because his hopes were shattered. He thought he was going to be released, and he wasn't. So you just heard Carolyn's story about that. You heard what has to happen. And I want to remind you that if you'd like to help him, because he has nothing now, he's got a girlfriend, and he can't even contact his girlfriend, and therefore he can't get in touch with his mother. He's being moved all over the place. I read that he's got the same clothes on he had when he left the J6 jail, same underwear, same socks. It's horrific. Just horrific. Well, there isn't much we can do except, you know, tweet what's happening to him, but you can help him financially. And you can also leave prayers or words to him of encouragement. Go to givesendgo.com/Jeremy Brown Defense. givesendgo.com/Jeremy Brown Defense. Well, we've had enough of a discussion about this today, so I'm going to say goodbye to you early. Remember, you can write us if you have a comment on this at sandy@afr.net. You can call and leave a comment, 662-821-2040, and we will appreciate all of your comments and certainly your help. I want to thank our sponsor, Timothy Bland, because they let you put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for entering into this just gallery of people who care and care enough to do something. I'm honored to be with you, and I thank you for everything that you've done. And I want to thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.